My guest at this time is Minnesota Republican Congressman Eric Paulson, a Republican who represents the Gopher State's 3rd Congressional District. He joins me today in the wake of the vote on the House floor on a balanced budget amendment proposal, which got a simple majority, but not the two-thirds majority necessary to pass it along to the Senate and eventually try to get three-quarters of the states to go along with it. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Well, the Republicans have just above 240, so you needed about 290 to get this done. How many Democrats ultimately came on board?
Well, not enough. There were 25 Democrats who voted yes for the bill. And look, I mean, you know, in the end, the spending issue and then our national debt, it's not a Republican problem. It's not a Democratic problem. It's an American problem. But not enough Democrats came along to vote for it in order to make it pass, because we did have enough Republicans. That was pretty clear.
What was the main argument from the Republicans, and what was the main argument from the Democrats that voted against it?
Well, the main argument from the Republicans, obviously, is, you know, since our country was first conceived and founded, the issue of debt and government spending has been at the forefront of the minds of our political leaders, national security advisors, and business owners and citizens alike. And when you get a $15 trillion national debt, I mean, that is significant. When our debt now is hit, as a percentage of our debt to GDP ratio is nearing 100%. I mean, that's critical. So that's the argument about having a fundamental reform to make sure Washington is not spending more than it's taking in. And I think a lot of the Democrats, I think some of it was politics, to be honest, because there were a handful of Democrats who flipped their vote. In 1995, they voted yes, and there were several of them that voted no this time around. I don't think they wanted to give the Republicans a victory and put the Senate on record on this, because now the Senate isn't necessarily required to vote on the bill, unfortunately.
Well, one of the big debates here among Republicans, certainly in my industry of talk radio and so forth, was whether or not this proposal went far enough, because there wasn't a restriction on the amount of spending as a percentage of GDP. There wasn't a two-thirds majority, supermajority required for tax increases. And so a lot of conservatives said this could actually be dangerous. You could just increase spending and then raise taxes a lot. So even in the simpler form, which I know ultimately the conference went with because that's what a lot of the states have, and that was the simplest way to put it out there and really make each member not have much of an excuse but vote on the simple idea of a balanced budget amendment, even right, that wasn't good enough.
Even that wasn't good enough. I mean, you know, the truth is only a balanced budget amendment can truly cut up the credit cards and force Washington to live within its means. And, you know, there are many of us that would love to have a tougher version to pass, but we did not want to see the Democrats also use other excuses to not have to vote for it or not be required to, you know, to perhaps to vote no on a balanced budget amendment. I mean, this was the simplest, purest form you could have of passing a balanced budget amendment. It passed in the House back in 1995, 1996, came one vote short in the Senate. I mean, I can't think of where we would be right now as a country, Greg, if we had actually passed it back then. We wouldn't have $15 trillion in national debt. We'd be much less, and we'd probably have our fiscal house in order. There'd be some tough decisions to have been made, but we'd have our fiscal house in order.
So where do you go from here?
Well, I think where we go from here is actually taking it not only to the American people, understanding how their own representatives voted, but we have to make sure that we have the conversation with folks about understanding that Washington needs to prioritize its spending, just as families have done, as small businesses have done. You know, that has not been happening. The simple truth is you can't spend more than you take in, and that's the reality. And if we don't want to be like Greece or some of these European countries, we've got to get ahead of the curve now. And, you know, some of us are nervous about the super committee not producing results. Some of us are nervous about not having tax reform to really encourage and enhance economic growth in this country, which is what we really do need to get the unemployed back to work. And we can't languish for another year waiting for the next presidential election. We need to tackle it now.
What should the American people read from, I guess, today's vote as well, but also the fact that the super committee, six members of each party, are tasked with reducing the amount of spending growth over the next 10 years, with projected deficits of about $1 trillion a year. They're asked to basically wipe out 1 year's worth of deficits over the next year, and there's an impasse. What should folks read into that?
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, Republicans have put some offers on the table, and the Democrats have not coalesced around a single proposal. In fact, the House Democrats have admitted they've got a very different worldview than even some of the Senate Democrats. And so I think the American public is growing frustrated with Washington, with their policymakers not being able to come up with solutions and be results oriented. And look, I mean, this is, I think, adding to the uncertainty out there, just having a broken Washington. And in the end, I think the American public is expecting their representatives to spend taxpayer money just as wisely as they spend their own, and that has not been happening.
We're talking with Minnesota Congressman Eric Paulson. And Congressman, what's your view from the outside looking in at this super committee? It was obviously part of the debt ceiling deal from a few months ago, but is this something that you're comfortable with happening behind closed doors, or do you think this is something that the whole Congress should be participating in?
Well, the whole Congress will participate in this within the next month, because regardless of the super committee's inaction or action, they have to act in some capacity so the automatic sequestration does not happen. So I have personally have always been a skeptic of having a super committee make these decisions. I think the only optimistic component that I've seen is that it's not an appointed commission. At least these are elected officials. They have their own areas of expertise. They're elected from their own districts, and so they're part of the body, a lot like a conference committee would be. But that hasn't, in fact, stopped the entrenchment that some have as a part of the viewpoints, making it difficult to come up with a significant package.
How worried are you, Congressman, that we will get to sequestration and then defense spending will be cut by substantial margins that even Secretary Panetta is worried about?
I am concerned. I'm very concerned about it because, the defense secretary himself has laid out what the terrible impacts that would be. I mean, the military is already going through a $450 billion reduction, I believe, over the next 10 years. This would be sequestration cuts on top of that. It would have devastating effects on our personnel, as well as our efforts around the globe, and not to mention the message that sends to our friends and allies. So I am very nervous about that, and if anything, that should increase, hopefully, the pressure among policymakers to make some of the right decisions. But it doesn't make the real money, to be honest, is making sure that we're addressing our entitlements, and that's where our challenge is making sure we're going to be preserving and protecting those entitlements for future generation by making reforms now.
Well, obviously, the balanced budget amendment didn't go the way you wanted it to on Friday, but one thing that is coming up pretty soon is, and really overdue, is the appropriations measures for the fiscal year 2012. Do you get the sense that there will be anywhere you can trim in there?
There will be money that will be trimmed in there. We're going to stick to spending less over the last couple of years. We've actually spent less on actual dollars each year in a row in the domestic discretionary spending. That's not been the case for mandatory spending, which is where the real money is in entitlements. But I feel like we're at least making progress on the domestic discretionary spending. Now, I'll be honest, we're not going to make the progress we need to make as a country until we get a new president in the White House. And unfortunately, that's a year away. But we're going to have to push hard and communicate very well to the American public why that's critical. Because when we were in the minority in the House, we did not legislate our way to the majority. We communicated our way to the majority. And that's what we need to do going into the next election a year from now.
Two very different visions out there, and perhaps even more. You've got the Tea Party movement, of course, that led in large part to a Republican majority in the House and gains in the Senate. Certainly a frustration, if not specifically the Tea Party, a frustration with the way that a Democratic-dominated Congress and White House were functioning. Now, of course, you have the counter-protest with the Occupy protests around the country and the president saying that it's time for the rich to pay their fair share and some of the principles in his jobs plan. How do you expect this debate to play out? As you mentioned, communicating with your constituents and others across the country, how do you make the case that your side's right?
Well, in the end, my constituents are expecting us to be proactive on creating jobs. And that means creating an environment where businesses, especially small businesses, can invest in their people and in their equipment with certainty. And we don't have that with the new health care law. We don't have that with the policies that passed under the previous Congress. That's why you're seeing this House majority not pass 2,000-page bills. We're being much more deliberative. We're trying to roll back regulations. We're trying to have tax reform that enhances economic growth by lowering rates and getting rid of lobbyist loopholes. And in the end, the Occupy folks that are protesting, that's more about division. I think we need to protect hardworking Minnesotans and Americans across the board, but we don't need dividers in the White House. We don't need dividers that are policymakers. We need to bring folks together and ultimately have those pro-growth economic policies. That's what my constituents want to see.
Congressman, we'll leave it there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today. Have a great weekend.
All right, same to you.
Minnesota Republican Congressman Eric Paulson represents his state's 3rd congressional district. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.